Mail's here, Henrietta.
I suppose I got a lot of cards again.
You can say that again.
Good grief, why do people insist on sending me cards?
They probably have nothing better to do than think up ways to torment you.
Oh, just look at this.
What is it, Hen?
It's another card from Mrs. Miller. That's the fourth one she sent me. Wish you were here. Hope your nose is mending all right. It's not the same without you.
What a lovely picture on the front of the card.
And here's one from Carl Rogers. We feel like part of us is missing when you're not here. Who are they kidding with this mushy nonsense?
Henrietta, they're just trying to cheer you up.
They probably feel guilty. It's all their fault.
How on earth did you figure that?
It's the sequence of events. It's plain as day. We go to church one day, and then what happens? They're nice. They're friendly. They tell me how happy they are to see me. And I fall for it. And the next thing I know, I'm accepting invitations to spaghetti dinners and dances and then softball games.
It's not their fault you missed the fly ball.
If they hadn't been so friendly, I wouldn't have been in right field in the first place.
Honestly, Henrietta.
Oh, listen to this. Roses are red. Guess your nose is too. At least the ball bounced off your head and you held the runner to two.
Henrietta, they just appreciate you.
Wish you were here. Hope you feel better. Hurry back. Get well. What are they doing to me?
They feel that you're a part of them. When you're not there, it must be like they're incomplete. Like, no, a body without a nose.
Oh. Or a team without a right fielder.
Oh, Henrietta, they're just trying to tell you that they miss you and they need you. What's wrong with that?
They want something from me.
Yes, Henrietta, your company, your friendship. They want for you to be part of the body again.
You think that's it? You think that's all there is to it?
Remember what it says in the Bible? Jerry just spoke about it and read the verse in church a couple weeks ago. The body is a unit, though it is made up of many parts. And though all of its parts are many, they form one body. So it is in Christ. And so it is with the church. These people love you, Henrietta. Plain and simple, they love you and need you and want you with them.
I think you're right. Why couldn't I see that before?
I don't know, Henrietta. It's as plain as the nose on your face.
The church. We've been going through November about loving our neighbors. We talked about loving the saints, loving our enemies in a very unique way, and then about loving the church. You know, historically, the church can be a pretty awful place, and a lot of people take great pains to stay away. Why do you think some people stay away from the church? Oh, just shout them out.
Bored.
Guilt.
Burned.
She's been listening. I boil it down to two, either bored or burned, usually carries them both. People see a lot of hypocrisy in the church, and we're certainly guilty of that. A lot of people see it as boring, irrelevant, mediocre. We're guilty of that too. Annie Dillard, a Pulitzer Prize winner, wrote this in her essay on an expedition to the pole. She describes her church experience. I love it. She says, week after week, I was moved by the pitiableness of the bare linoleum-floored sacristy, which no flowers could cheer or soften, by the terrible singing I so loved, by the fatigued Bible readings, the lagging emptiness and dilution of the liturgy, the horrifying underlying vacuity of the sermon and by the fog of dreary senselessness pervading the whole, which existed alongside and probably caused the wonder of the fact that we came. We returned. We showed up. Week after week, we went through it. High school stage play, Dillard complained, looked better than lots of what passes in church. A lot of people find it just fairly irrelevant. And then there's the intolerant part. Christians are known as people who have hounded heretics and burned books and supported pseudoscience and been incredibly intolerant of other people. And yeah, that's kind of the church too. And so we long, even those of us who are faithful in the church, long for something that is better than that. And so actually, a lot of times we find ourselves looking to the early church, thinking it's more pure and holy. If you were to peruse 1 Corinthians, which Jerry read this morning, you would find that it just ain't so. Paul was with the Corinthian church, that early church, for about a year and a half. He knew them very well. And if you were to go on to read those two letters to the Corinthian church, Paul addresses a whole bunch of really ugly issues. There's a whole bunch in there where he's trying to counter what we would call sectarianism. I'm more spiritual than you are. I'm better than you are. I'm more holy than you are. I know God better than you are. Then he actually even talks in 1 Corinthians 5 about stuff, about people who are boasting about incest, believe it or not. The kind of thing that doesn't even occur among the pagans, he writes. There are lawsuits between Christians. People are taking each other to court. People are eating food that's been sacrificed to idols in another church down the street and really screwing up everybody's mind. There's disarray in worship and people talking and yakking and getting up and moving. And, you know, if they had chairs, they would have been scraping them. And then there were the pseudo-preachers that would come in, masquerading as these super apostles and trying to take over. The ancient church really didn't have it all that great. If you look closely, the first believers' churches were a whole lot like the ones we see today. This week I happened to be in two meetings with two different groups of clergy friends, one on Wednesday and one on Thursday. And I'm not going to try to convince you how hard it is to be a pastor these days. I couldn't do it unless I spent a lot of time. But I will tell you that my colleagues, the people who do what I do, they're on their last legs. They are tired and they are weary. They're tired of being thrown in with the rest of quote-unquote church and being viewed as intolerant and anti-this and anti-that. They just get weary of trying to counteract that image. And they get weary of doing good, of working with people, the same people who then talk behind their back and spread gossip and inspect the impossible from one human being who's making way too little and magically take their entire church back to 1955. I had a friend that said this to me. She said, every time, this is what's so fascinating, she goes, every time I think of throwing in the towel, something will happen which calls me back. And I don't like it. A part of me wishes that wouldn't happen so I could just leave and make a clean break. But I can't. It's like God knows where my limit in is and he just steps in at the last moment and throws something out there to restore my hope. I mean, my heart ached for it because she identified it so well. Don't we? And we all get that sometimes. You know, you just wish God wouldn't keep stepping in and showing hope so you could just throw it all away. Well, despite the hypocrisy, the boredom, the sinfulness, the intolerance, I keep coming back. And I love my church. And most of you do too. We have to ask ourselves, why bother with church when it's so bad? Or flip it as a positive question, which is much more helpful. What do we love about God's church that holds us close and draws us back, sometimes despite our, you know, despite our more base instincts? What is it Let me ask you, before I give you all my reasons, why do you love the church, God's church? It doesn't mean this congregation, any congregation, wherever you find yourself. What is it that you love about God's church that keeps bringing you back? All right, God's people, warts and all. A feeling of safety. Excellent. What'd you say? Pitching in, being a part. Being a part of the body. You like being a part. Yeah, some place to make sense of the chaos that's going on around us. Yeah. Quiet voice. Anything else comes to mind? I'm sorry, what? Hope for our time. And then there was another one? Gives you hope, all right? To be fed?
To unload,
yeah. There's a couple of things that's important for us to remember as we look at the church and try to love the church. And again, I'm thinking much bigger than this little congregation. Is to remember that God's kingdom is not identical with the institutional thing we call church. That God's kingdom is much bigger and much broader. And what the church can do is to help point the way to the kingdom. Point out where we see it and continue to move toward it. The church is not the kingdom. The church always has traitors in it, always has slackers in it. Look at Judas. It's always going to have people who have lost their way, and there will always be people in it who actually seek to do you harm. It's fascinating the number of bipolar people that come and are part of church life. It is larger than the population as a whole. It is disproportionate, to the population as a whole. Partly because we represent ourselves as a hospital, so golly, then sick people come. That's part of our problem. We're victims of our own success. We promote ourselves as a place to be safe, as a place to find healing. So guess what? Sick people come. I love the church because it's watching, waiting, and working for God's kingdom to kind of break into the world, to make sense out of the chaos. And we're trying to live our lives in a way that promote love and mercy and peace and justice and grace. And the church keeps me honest to that task. In gathering here, I find out, wow, am I really promoting peace? Am I really promoting mercy? I can delude myself pretty well when I'm by myself. So the importance of community. And whatever the church's shortcoming, I do experience a lot of good here. Think about the church as a whole. What good has the church done in the world? Think about it for a second. What good has the church done in the world? The Inquisition aside. We'll get to that. What good has it done? Has it done any good? What?
Changed hearts. It's promoted us a sense of justice.
Yes. Yes, has a huge sense of justice. Whether we always hit the mark or not, what we know as justice really does come from these roots. That is true. Yeah, Sharon.
It's empowering and caring for each other.
Caring for each other, and how that then expresses itself in very practical ways. I mean, think of the work that has been done to feed the hungry. For all of our faults, we feed the hungry. We comfort the dying. We give hope for the prisoner and the prisoner's children. Care for the widows. We love the orphans. We build schools and hospitals in parts of the world that it would never happen. It's fascinating when you talk to Dr. Klemmer in the Congo and the work that he's able to do, even as a quote-unquote religious missionary, because it's the missionaries who care about the health of the people. And most of the hospitals in the Congo are church-run. If it was left to the public sector, there wouldn't be any. They don't have the means. They just don't have it. Focusing only on the faults distorts the image of the church. And for every ugly moment in the church, there are 100 selfless moments. And it's incumbent on us as people searching for God to look for those moments, to notice those. And they don't all have to be Mother Teresa moments. They can be small moments that even you and I are a part of. So there is a lot of good. And then we have to remember that it is God's ordained institution, human institution, which he chooses to work in. God chose the church, not me. God chose it. God builds it. It's his, despite its faults. I love reading a guy who writes a lot of thoughts about the church. His name is Dan Clendenin, and he writes this in Disillusioned with Church. He writes this, and why he keeps coming to church, why he keeps being a part. He goes, "Since I believe that the church is God's ordained human institution where he has chosen to work, even though it swarms with many faults, I want to place myself there to receive what he has to give. More often than not, if I listen carefully, I am not disappointed." The writer Flannery O'Connor said that she sat at her writing desk every morning so that she would be ready if and when an idea came to her. It was the discipline of going to that place, if and when an idea came to her. Likewise, in her memoirs, Nancy Mayers writes that she moved beyond her lapsed Catholic faith and returned to church, even though she still had many questions, so that she could, quote, "prepare a space into which belief could flood." Huh, isn't that great? Prepare a space into which belief could flood. That it's important to be in the place. That it is important to show up, because that's where the possibility happens. It's in the community of the faithful where I am most likely to notice God, believe it or not. There are lots of other places, but that is a place that God has ordained and God appears. And then lastly, to finish, I go to church out of a deep sense of my own personal need. Because being a Christian is one of the few things in life you just really can't do by yourself. Catholic Church used to proclaim, and it may still do so, but I remember when I was growing up, one of the big bywords when I was growing up was, "Outside the church, there is no salvation." Anybody ever heard that? "Outside the church, there is no salvation." I didn't write it up, but I don't know. It's some famous quote by some famous person. Outside the church, there is no salvation. That used to inflame me. I used to be very offended by that quote. Think about it. Outside the church, there is no salvation. I thought that was pretty narrow and exclusionary. I have to admit, as I get older, I'm beginning to understand at least the sentiment behind that phrase. I think what it's saying is, outside of Christian community, lone rangers cannot survive. That if you are faithful to Christ and made a commitment to Christ but are not a part of his ongoing community, you will wither and die. It's in community that we figure out what it means to be a Christian. Anybody can claim to be a Christian if you live all by yourself. That's easy. Think about it. It's people that make this work hard, isn't it? It's in community that the rubber hits the road, where all our pious sentiments are tested. I mean, I have said this more than once to my if it weren't for the people, this job would be a breeze. But I love you. But isn't it true? I have another friend whose treasurer embezzled funds from their mission account. $15,000 to $20,000 never got to the missionaries in the field. And when it came to light, the church could have just called the police. It's embezzlement. But they knew the money was gone. It wasn't going to come back. And this woman does not have the means by which to ever repay it back. So instead, they actually chose the path of restorative justice. They brought in a mediator. They've worked together as a church. Because they believed as a church community that there was still possibility for repentance and reconciliation, perhaps not restitution, but hopefully the restoration of relationship. And that church has chosen the hard road. But they've chosen the road of Jesus, and I commend them, and I pray for them. The rubber's hitting the road. What would that look like? Wow. A woman once said, "I am a loyal member of a dysfunctional family." She was talking about the church. And my quote from this morning, Erasmus. Now, you're going way, way, way back to get this. So it's been around a long time, and I wonder if it echoes your thoughts. It certainly echoes mine. He's talking about the imperfections of the church. He says, "Therefore, I will put up with this church until I see a better one. And it will have to put up with me until I become better." I am thankful for God's church, however imperfect, that has welcomed me and welcomed my imperfect faith. And I'm hoping that as I've kind of poured out my heart to you, that it will touch in you what you love about the church. That it's God who woos us here, but it's we who respond. And there are people in your life that God is wooing, even right now, to come nearer to Him. And I pray that as a church we are sensitive to that. That we will continue to reach out. That we will continue to invite. Not to just have someone be a part of Sunday morning, although I love this place and I love this gathering. To be a part of God's work. To be a part of what God's doing on the earth. Because it is God's church. And it's God's work. And it's what we love. And it's what God continues to call us back to. Warts and all. This is our place. This is our home. And it's home for a lot of people who don't even know it yet. So let's be sensitive to that. Would you join me in prayer? Lord God, we recognize the faults of our church. And not just our little congregation here.